words so brightly revealed, and the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched, words so gallant.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Sports Radio 610 Outdoor Show, hour number three. All right, it is 6:02 here in the Bayou City. That's Rundown South now. Let's go down to Corpus Christi. Let's check in with our good friend, Captain Cliff Webb, see what he's doing. Good morning, Cliff. How you doing, buddy?
Morning, Mickey. Morning. I'm not used to looking outside not seeing fog. What's going on
yeah,
this morning? It was just foggy when I got
this
up.
Morning. Well, I did talk to Sharky a while ago, and he said it was rolling in down there on the west end where he's at. So here we go again.
That's happened happens a couple times to us where it's, you know, it's clear at 4 o'clock, then at 6 o'clock it's covered up, but it's been affecting my morning bite.
Yes.
You know, I can't get out there, and I like that little major or minors we've been having in the mornings. I've been missing it because I've been getting out there late, you know, just can't
right
get out there in that fog. Golly, but hey, man, that tournament last weekend was something else, that Legends. I don't know if you looked at some of that stuff, but that was something else. A lot of those guys ran off from Mansfield up to here to fish. I just think that's crazy. It's just how when it warms up, those fish scatter so much, Mickey, you know, in that cold weather. These fish are so much heavier, and you just catch so much bigger fish than you have the warm-ups.
Yeah, better quality, no doubt.
Better quality. And you look at some of those fish we caught when it's cold, so you're adding a big mullet in their stomach, what's happening. So you got a, like that one that 10-4 was caught, that was a 30-inch fish, which should have worked, you know, weighed around 7.5-8 pounds normally, but you eat a 2-pound mullet, you're up there.
Yeah.
But that's what happens in these fronts. You know, you get these fish gorging on these pound mullet and stuff, it really adds a weight to them. But I was surprised that I only saw a couple 8-pound fish caught in that tournament. I was surprised, weren't you?
Yeah, I think there was only one, wasn't it?
I think there was one. I don't know.
That's,
I know
Quebec caught, and then there were some sevens. You know, a couple of high sevens. But
and I know scouting before they caught some eights. I know talked to guys that caught some eights scouting before. But and if it had been one of those days, it had been 35 degrees or something. You'd have seen a lot more of those 8-pounders simply because they're gorging on mullet, you know.
Right.
But that's what was going on there. I was amazed how many people fished that tournament, and two of the partners caught fish and the third one didn't. How many times does that happen in that tournament where your buddies got your fish and you're sitting there at 2 o'clock, you ain't had a bite? I mean, that's tough, man.
It is. It really is.
You know, and it's usually some of the best fishermen that don't catch them. You know, I was talking to one of my buddy Scott and his team member. You know, his best fisherman on the team zeroed one day. You know, it just happens. It just you can't make them bite that plug. But it was pretty crazy. But anyway, so Monday I had your old buddy Chip, the golfer and professional golfer and stuff down here fishing. Monday, really enjoyed fishing with him again. He fished me, I guess, 3 or 4 years ago, and he left a golf hat in the boat. It was signed by a bunch of golfers, and I stuck it on the shelf on my lost and found shelf, and I finally got it back to him. It was funny. It was the oldest thing I had up there, because I take pride in when people leave something in the boat, I put it in the lost and found.
Well, you saved my lucky stringer. That's,
I do.
That's one I've had forever. Pete Tanner made me that 30 or 40 years ago, I don't know how long ago. I know I put my biggest stringer of fish on there. I had a bunch of giant stringers that I strung on that stringer, and it's just something.
And I think Pete gave me one. You know, somebody brought me one. I don't know if it was Pete many, many years ago, and I've got that same stringer. You know, I treasure it. It's really something to see the old time stuff like that. That's just cool, man. You know, what we used to use. You know, the muckerel and the old guy that fished the big trout back then, they used airplane cable, the stuff that came out of airplanes, the steering cables and stuff, the plastic coated cables.
Yeah, where they'll slide off easy when you're boxing them. Blaine used to use one of those.
Yeah, that was a big deal back then, the aircraft cable. You know, and they put a cork on it, and they would put a hook on it, you know, just a big hook. And
I always use those rope stringers like that heavy rope, because it just made such beautiful stringer pictures, you know, when you'd hold them up.
Yes, it did. Held them out. Yeah.
Hung,
they didn't
bunch
up.
Uniform and straight. And if you string them properly, you know, that's
you know, I'm seeing stringer pictures on Facebook. I'm not believing, like, 20 trout on a stringer. I'm going, what is this, dude? Where are these guys at? Must be Louisiana or something. But
I don't know. Well, they're just bringing up stuff from the old days, throwing it on there.
I guess so. I'm seeing some of those. I'm flipping through that stuff. I go, man, that's crazy. Somebody will send me something on Facebook.
We could flood the market. What if we started popping all our old photos, one a day on there?
Oh, my God.
It'd take 5 years to put all those stringer shots on there.
You know, it's so funny, Mickey. I've kept shoeboxes full of old fish pictures, you know, just bunches of shoeboxes. And I'm thinking, you know, one day I need to get those and scan them, because it's the background and stuff that's just, you know, it's the fish are great, but the background has changed so much in all these pictures.
Yeah.
You know, I look at that shoreline now and go, wow, that shoreline is totally different. This area is totally different. Look at the water. Look at this, you know, look at that. And the marina pictures of Marker 37 going through the years of all the changes are pretty incredible.
Yeah,
you know, Marker 37 has gone through a lot. I mean, and look at Snoopy's. You know, Snoopy's restaurant was a biker bar that had four tables in it, and it was a biker bar, had four tables, and Ernie ran it, and they served beer, and
Ernie
they get in
Butler.
Fights every night. Yeah, and they get in fights all the time, and Ernie had to go run them out, so he shut them all down one day. And Carol and I came in there from surfing. I never forget. We came in there. We were young, and we come in there. Ernie goes, "Come in here, man. I'm gonna turn this into a restaurant and fry shrimp." He hands us a plate of shrimp, and we actually ate the first plate of shrimp out of Snoopy's. It was a Hungry Jack pancake mix for the batter, and he mixed it up, and he goes, "You think I can get $4.56 for 12 shrimp?" And I said, "I bet you can."
I'm pretty sure you can there, bro.
Big old basket of fried shrimp, you know. And back then, Ernie ran the boat. You know, he was his own shrimper, and so he would go out and shrimp and catch his own shrimp. You know. He caught his own fish, his own drum, and you talk about fresh. I mean, you don't get much better than that, you know. But I've seen a lot of change going to that bridge right there, buddy. Man.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Seen a lot. But anyway, I'll tell you about Chip.
120 mile an hour boats running under that bridge in tournaments.
It is crazy. It is. You know,
all the cops are up there, and when they're coming through, we're going to radar these suckers and see how fast
it's crazy,
we're going.
Man.
That's crazy, isn't it?
The day I had your buddy Chip and those guys out there in Sam, and Sam fishes with Plog a lot, really, all really good fishermen, you know. We don't get out till like 9 o'clock. It's so foggy, you can't see nothing. I mean, you can't see the dock at Mark 37. I'm not running. I don't have radar. I ain't running in it. I'm sorry. So
no, it ain't worth it.
I see another boat up there, you know, on Monday. He's got a 500 horse, you know, on a 21 footer, and he's talking about that tournament, how far they ran and all that stuff. And he said, "Well, we didn't catch any fish. We spent $1,500 and we didn't catch any fish, but we had a good time." I said, "That's great, man." But anyway, so I finally get out with Chip and those guys on the shoreline like cracking 9 o'clock, because finally broke the fog out where we could see 500 yards, and I'm trying to keep the boat close to them. I got them on the shoreline, Mickey, and I'm power pulled down within 50 yards of them. I'm just following with the trolling motor, make sure they don't get hit, and I hear a boat coming. And so I get up behind them, and of course this boat runs just outside the fog. You never see it, Mickey. it's probably 50 yards away, and you never, it's the weirdest feeling where you don't know exactly where it's at. You just hear it.
Oh, I know.
I just get the boat. I hate that feeling. And you know, and we're trying to get out on this little hump where the fish aren't. And Chip finally goes out there and sticks a 4-pounder like the third cast and sticks another one about 3. And we start sticking some fish. The fog starts lifting, and we start working down the shoreline. And as it clears up, the water's just gin clear, and these fish are just profiling us big time. I mean, they're spooking out in front of us. If you catch them, it's a very end of your cast. You know, if you catch them right when it hits the water. And so we try to get out of there and find some dingier water. I mean, how often do you try to find dingier water? But that's what happens down here. So on my second move is one I should have stayed on. You know, I pull into an area farther south, and we pull out, and I catch a 5, 5.5, and, you know, a 4, and everybody's catching like 20 to 23-inch fish, and it's pretty good. But I'm thinking in the back of my mind, another place, another farther south, I ought to be there, you know. And I taught myself into pulling off those fish. I broke the golden rule, never leave fish to find fish. And I pulled off those fish, and the rest of the day we struggled. We caught fish, but it was too far out of the gas range. We were almost, you know, our fuel was so much in that boat, only holds 74 gallons. So I was out of fuel. I couldn't go back to the first spot. Caught fish, but it's funny how you don't know. In that whole day,
you can't catch big ones unless you leave some biting to go look for them, you know.
Yeah, and that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get a really big fish, and the biggest fish we were catching were 4 and 5s. Mm. You know, and we knew there were somewhere in that really shallow water, somewhere there were some big ones. And so we were on the search pattern. But that usually bites me when I leave them to find fish. But that whole day, Mickey, the bait was shut down. The birds, there was hardly any pelicans. It was just kind of a blah day.
Off day, yeah.
Just,
you can tell.
Just kind of off, man. You can just tell, man. But I enjoyed fishing with Sam and those guys listening to James Plog stories. It was really good. It was really fun.
Oh, God.
Oh, really good. He's such a great fisherman. It's always good to hear stories about him, man.
He's a character.
Yeah, it's not like he's been catching some fish.
Yeah, he's molesting them. Ripping holes in them.
Yeah, it sounds like it, man. But, you know, you're talking about fog in February, and that was 1987, and we had 26 days of fog in February.
You know, that sounds about right. I remember one year in the 80s, it was like that. We waited in the fog every day. I mean, just,
it was the most foggiest day I've ever seen in my life.
Dripping,
foggiest month ever.
Just nasty.
Every single day.
Catching some toads.
And back then, we didn't have GPSs. I remember trying to find my way down. I would run across and try to hit the King Ranch shoreline with a compass. And then, of course, there's no boats, nothing, and get right tight on that shoreline, hope I don't hit a rock, and try to get into Bath. And, you know, I'm going, what am I doing? You know, and just dense fall. But there was no other boats, Mickey. The only other guy was Doug, and he was either, we were together, or I knew where he was running, you know. Big difference now with all the boats. Man, crazy.
Oh, Doug.
Yeah. Amen. I'm hoping that someday they'll come out with a small radar we can put on our smaller boats that'll fish it. But I just can't believe that all the electronics we've got, we don't have something like that, Mickey.
Yeah, something that you don't have to have that big unit spinning.
Mm-hmm. It's just that's what it is. Just too much stuff to put on a small boat, right?
Exactly. I mean, you got to have room to fish, you know.
Everybody's hair falls out before you get there. It's not good.
That's exactly right. All right, let me knock this break out, Cliff. I'll be right back at you, buddy.
All right.
Well, I need to take a moment to tell everyone about Boyd's One Stop. They're the home of the supercharged, super slimy powerhouse croakers, located at the base of the Tech City Dike at 227 Dike Road. And if you're looking for quality live bait, look no further than Boyd's. From their tanks to your live well, that bait's as good as it can possibly be, and there's no better way to leave your bait or your tournament fish than with their oxygen response system. Check them out firsthand at the store. If you need more info, you can call Jason Cogburn at 281-701-8107. And while you're by the store, check out all their wild-caught Gulf shrimp, no farm-raised at Boyd's, all quality wild-caught shrimp, and all their different sizes, great prices, and crawfish season. It's in full swing. You always think about Boyd's with all their good prices and availability on crawfish. Call them at 409-945-4001 or go to boydsonestop.com. And when you do, please tell them Captain Mickey sent you. Morning. Welcome back to the Sports Radio 610 Outdoor Show. All right, it's 619 here in the Bayou City. All right, Cliff, we're back, buddy.
All right, buddy. I got a text from our old buddy Doug Pike a while ago. He goes, it was pretty foggy when you and I were fishing, but I was thinking about how foggy it was when Pike and I were down there. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
It was, I had that Kenner with that 200 on it, and I remember we're catching all those big old pigs, just every cast, you know, and just didn't want to leave. In the fog, you can't see the bank, and somehow I turned down that shoreline and start heading down that shoreline. I think at that time there's one or two piers on that shoreline, and I came right up on that pier too quick, and Doug goes, slow this sucker down, man.
It was the pier.
It was bad, man, but I don't know how we found marker 37 every day, but we did. But even the day before Doug got there, I fished with this doctor, Pat Thomas, and I was paying a doctor bill and caught some big old pigs. Same thing. We got, you know, caught fish too late and got caught in the fog, you know. But that's the trouble, is in the mornings now, you get that fog, you miss that morning bite. It just kills you, especially when the water's gin clear, because that morning bite in that really clear water is very important for those big fish. It just, you know, that's when I catch my biggest fish in that clear water, when it's just really early or just right at dark.
See, we're luckier up here because we've got so many boat ramps spread out around the bay system. And if you kind of know where you're wanting to fish, you can pull and don't have that long run in the fog to get to where you want to fish.
Yeah.
But I down there where you're that, at, I mean,
there's not.
You're screwed.
You know, realize how many boat ramps are shut down, Mickey? I mean, we don't have hardly any at all.
Yeah,
and you got two or three
lost
on the
your
island.
Boat ramp over there on the north side.
Yeah, Laguna Shores, and then, of course, the other boat ramp at Packers, you know, they didn't build it right. Your tongue, your trailer hits when you try to back in. That was terrible design there.
Yeah,
then
the slope on that's too steep.
Yeah, then a lot of the stuff. And then on the other ones, the water, when the water's high, you got to back your tailpipe into the water, you know, in the public ramp. So it's a mess, you know, it really is. And then what we're going to see this summer is now that, you know, Flyer Bluff has shut down Bluff Landing and stuff, all those guys are coming over here. So it's just going to double the traffic over here at 37.
Yeah, it's going to make it way overcrowded.
And the problem we have is dock space. So there's only so much dock space to tie your boat at 37. And so all these guys got to get there at 3:30, 4 o'clock to get their bait, their best bait. So, you know, they got their bucket of tidy bowl water, their blue waters, and they're filling up all their little wells and, you know, all their little live wells at 4 o'clock in the morning. Well, they take over all the dock, and the guys don't show up till 8 o'clock. And so, you know, you pull in there, there's no place to tie your boat. You know, there's no place to get gas. And so it kind of irritates the marina guys because they're just, you know, I wish there was a way they could buy that bait and, you know, put it in their boat, with their boat on the trailer or something. I don't know. But it's just getting to be ridiculous trying to park your boat. You got to get there at 3 a.m., you know. But the good thing is they're all back in by 10 o'clock. And when you come in, there's plenty of dock space.
Sure.
They're all gone. And another thing we got here, Mickey, so on Monday, you know, We released all of our fish, and, you know, Chip and those guys gut hooked two little trout, like 18 inches, and they floated, so they put them in their bag. I said, hey, man, I don't normally keep these fish, but these are floated, let's keep them. So I put them in the ice chest, and we come back, there's not a single public table under the bridge now. It's all privately owned tables where, you know, you have to pay to get your – there's not a table to clean those fish. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, you know, I never come in that early where there's a fish cleaner. I mean, my fish cleaner leaves at 3:30, 4 o'clock, and I usually get in sometime in the winter, 4 or 5 o'clock, and if a guy does have a fish, we got to go find a place to clean it.
Right.
And which is really changed a lot in my lifetime. You know, in the old days, you pull up in the afternoon and clean your fish, and you BS with everybody around the table. Well, those days are gone. You know, it's just like a professional takes your fish, or you shake a guy's hand, they go home. It's just, you know, it's just the fishing whole industry in my area has changed. It's more commercial.
Yeah, it really has now that way. You know, it's kind of like Louisiana now. You got to pay a fish cleaner to clean your catch, you know.
That's the same thing here. You know, and
guides don't
that's
have
the same thing. And he's, you know, which we don't keep a lot of fish. You know, we have a few people in the summer who want to keep a few fish. But, you know, but the thing it did do is all those dead bull red heads floating around the marina, all stinking and stuff, that's all gone. I mean, I don't know if you've ever been, but before they would clean all these redfish, you know, and all these fish would float dead. They'd throw them off the fish clean tail and they'd float around all the boats and the boat slips. It was horrible. So I understand what they're doing there, you know, so, but it would be nice for them to have some kind of a little table in the afternoon where even if you had to put your fish in the basket, haul them off yourself, some way to clean a fish if you, if you get a couple in the afternoon, you know. Right now, I have to take them all the way to my house and clean them at the house, you know. So for
yeah,
the people.
Then you got to dispose of the carcasses another way.
Yes,
you know?
Yeah, it's just, yeah, but it's all right. But it's funny how things have changed in our lifetime, you know.
Well, yeah, always when I clean fish, I'd always stick my knife into that air bladder where they wouldn't pop back up.
Yeah, so it doesn't float. Yes,
discard them. Plus,
yes, yeah, you'll take the side.
So bars, and I mean, you can throw a trout carcass in the water where I fish out of, and the hardheads look like piranhas, just
really
annihilating that carcass.
Uh huh. I mean, we had some of that too, but it was just too much. You know, when you had that many people fishing out of here, you know, you just thousands of pounds of fish, you know. Our fish are going to clean 1,700 pounds one Saturday, so that gives you an idea what the volume of fish, because we have all the offshore guys coming in here and dropping off their snapper and their kingfish, and so that was all floating around the marina too, you know. So I understand what they're doing there, but, man, it's a total different game now, buddy.
Yeah, it is.
But,
it has changed.
Yeah, it's we went from, you know, catching 10 fish and fill up a whole box every day, people bringing in, you know, coolers you could lift out of the boat, and then standing in line and talking with all the other guys and all the other customers and seeing how their day went and how many fish stories and all the stuff and laughing and everybody having a cold beer around the fish cleaning table, where now everybody comes in and gets their stuff and drives off. You know, it's just like, so, you know, it's the whole thing is kind of different now. Anyway, but
The meal mentality deal, that's pretty much gone.
Yes, sir.
Probably for good too.
I got a lot of stuff fixed in the boat. That I tore up my trolling motor real bad, so I went in. I was going to go ahead and put a new trolling motor on my boat, but they're like $5,000 now, Mickey, for a 36 volt.
It's outrageous.
You know, it's purple. Crazy. So I Frankensteined it. We took a bunch of old parts and put it back together. But it's going again. But I can't fish the spring without a trolling motor. I fish so much deep rock that I just can't fish without a trolling motor. It's this time of year I'm wading. I usually just to pull into the shore or go pick up my clients. But in the springtime, I do some serious trolling motor fishing. So I had to get her fixed.
Yeah that's. You know, you look at how that aspect of fishing's changed, too. Look how many fish we used to catch way back in the day without a trolling motor, and now you can't live without one.
Yep.
I mean, not if you're going to do it right.
You know, I think about Doug Bird, how much he really brought that trolling motor into our fishery. You know, that working the drop-offs and working the rocks with the trolling motor. You know, we used to before we'd throw out a sea anchor, just drift across them. Now that a trolling motor, you can line up your drift just perfect to hit the single rock
keep
that you want to hit.
Keep the boat positioned properly where your people can throw to where you're telling them to throw. And, you know, that.
Yeah.
I remember when I first started using a troll motor back in the late 70s, early 80s, and everybody was making fun of me. You know, going, what is that deal on the back of your boat? You know, back then we've had them on the back on the transom. Well, a lot of guys still have them that way. They prefer it. I'd rather have it on the bow. It's so much.
Right.
It's so much easier to position a boat, and it's easier to pull that boat than it is to push it. And
yes. And down here, you got to be able to see the rocks. If you have it on the back, you'll run over a rock, because in the front,
you
can see the shadow of the rock coming up. You know, you
exactly.
can turn, you, know, you see the rock, you turn to the side, you let everybody throw to it.
Right. I'm with you on that. But it's that was a game changer back in the day, especially working birds and, you know, staying on the open water school and, you know, the way we fish up here. It's a little different than down there, but pretty much the same as far as lure selection and, you know, approach and all that.
And you probably use the trolling motors to keep you off the edge of the reefs and stuff like that. And, you know, and the trolling motors have changed so much. You know, we just had the 12-volt before, and they all plugged into the deck, and that plug would catch on fire, and so they finally started, you know, wiring direct to the batteries. And I mean, that we would have so much trouble with our trolling motors that Gene, the guy that worked on before Doug, and my dad had the trolling motor shop. They built like a little aluminum box to put on the front of your boat. It had to off on and off switch where you just push it with your foot,
right?
Because the wiring switches were just so bad on those first ones, you know. But And now what's so cool is you have the spot lock where, for instance, you pull into a school of fish, you find them on your side scanner or whatever, and you see a big rock out there that's got a bunch of bait on it. Instead of blowing by it, you just hit the spot lock and turn the back of the boat, the stern of the boat around, and let your guys fire at that rock, and you get several casts at it. You're 40 yards right. away, but yet you're on spot lock, and you're able to fish that school of fish instead of just blowing right by it. And so it's the electronics have definitely changed. And you know, I'm seeing all this electronics where the guys are having the fish sonar on top of their trolling motor now, where they scan out front. That's yeah. really unique. I had a guy send me a picture of that, where he pulls up to a rock, and he turns the trolling motor, you know, like 4 or 5 degrees, and just scans the entire rock and see what's around it. That's something else, man. It's kind of like the bass fishermen doing.
That's another game changer.
Mm-hmm. Haven't got to see a live scope. Have you seen the live scope work yet, Mickey?
Oh yeah, it's a game changer. There's nothing left for the imagination with that. I mean, you can exactly see what you're throwing at.
Yeah, and I wonder how far that thing shoots out. Do you know?
Man, I know the offshore boats. They're shoot out a long ways. You know that they'll troll and chase marlin like that.
Right.
Man, in the bays in here, maybe 30 yards, if you're lucky. It depends on the density of the water, too, you know, how much phytoplankton and all that you got in the water and, you know, with salt water.
I saw the first one come down, one of the Crones put it on his boat, and it was like a power pole that lowered down in the water.
Yeah.
And, you know, it shot underneath the boat. And he forgot to pick it up one day and ran across a flat. That was the end of that. So anyway,
that was a high dollar hiccup.
He said, yeah, that was a high dollar mess up there, but I think they've done something with that now. I think things are different.
Yeah, I run a bottom machine on my front mount trolling motor, you know, with my Lowrance and everything, and that's good for me because I'm up there, you know, positioning the boat, and I can stay on my same track line that I caught fish before. Plus, I know what my depth is and whether I'm on hard bottom, soft, you know, whatever, whether I'm over shell and all that. And it keeps me in touch where I don't have to yell back to the back and say, hey, what depth does the screen say back there? And they'll always tell you how many knots you're moving every time.
Yeah, that's what Doug did.
1.1, I said, no, there's no way. I said, that's how fast I'm moving with a trolling motor. Look at the other one. Right. Oh, yeah, it says 4.6. There you go.
Well, Doug put one on for his trolling motor. He could stay on the depth he wanted. He could stay.
Yes, it's real important. You know, it's a great tool to have on your trolling motor so you can keep that, you know, consistent depth where you're throwing to another depth, especially when you're working ledges and drop-offs and things like that.
Yeah, but how many good trout fishermen have come from the bass area? Just, you know, I think of Doug and all these guys that kind of started out bass fishing, the Crone brothers, all these guys kind of started out bass fishing, you know, and got into the saltwater market. It's crazy, man.
You know, you can catch so many big fish out of the boat if you know what you're doing.
Exactly right.
You know, old school, I always wanted to wade fish and catch them just because I liked wade fishing, but it got so crowded and, you know, on the flats and the shorelines in the 80s that I had to just force myself to, hey, I gotta do a game change here. Something's got to give. And that's when I learned to, well, it made me a better fisherman. I just said, to heck with all this Donnybrook stuff in here. I'm going out deep. And I went out deep and figured out how to work those big schools, big trout. Because you see it down there. You got fish that like to stay on deep structure, and you got other fish that like to live in the shallows.
There's fish that stay in that 4 or 5 foot water most of the time. Unless it gets cold, they got to pull up shallow. You know
exactly. Yeah. They don't have to go in shallow. They've learned how to capture bait in deaper conditions instead of having to go shallow to catch bait. So
that's where we catch a lot of our fish. And that, you know, Doug says that 3 to 4 foot water is trout water. That's where he spent most of his time drifting. You know,
that's the way it is here. I mean, we caught a lot of fish. Shallow too, don't get me wrong, knee deep water type fishing on our flats here, but the majority of the big catches we ever made, we were waist deep, throwing out deep into that 4 foot range, 4 and 5 foot of water.
And just like Monday, we passed tons of sitting birds on the water where I knew there was fish. I could have drifted in there and just loaded the boat with just pencils and 18, 19-inch fish. But, you know, Chip and those guys, they come down for the big bite. And so we stayed shallow. We threw the soft lines. We stayed up shallow, you know.
Right.
And even though we didn't catch anything over 5, 5.5 pounds, we still were in the area where we could have caught a really big one, you know.
Yeah.
Well, and I've caught them out there drifting. I've caught them drifting too, Mickey, but, you know. Right now,
well, if you're gonna catch a big one, you got to go where they live and just hope that bite, you know, opens up for you. That's all you can do. Fish it out. Yep. That's all you can do.
Fish it out, buddy.
Let me knock this break out, and I'll come back and we'll talk some more about this. All right. Well, folks, if you're going fishing, well, don't not till you've been to the 50th annual fishing show. That's coming up next week, February 12th through the 16th, at the George R. Brown Convention Center. And we're talking everything for the fishermen, all the new rods, reels, lures, and they'll have factory reps there with their booths and displays showing you their new products and how to use them, and guides from Alaska to South America booking trips, and they'll have dozens of fully rigged boats on display and hundreds of kayaks. So check out their clinics. They have them daily by expert fishermen covering salt and freshwater. And don't forget about their special kids clinic. That's on Saturday and Sunday. You want to get the kids out of the house. It'll be a fun thing for them. It's always fun for all the kids. They'll leave with some nice product, too. So if you love to fish or just want to learn more about fishing, don't miss the 50th annual fishing show. That's February 12th through the 16th at the George R. Brown Convention Center. Check it out at HoustonFishingShow.com. Good morning. Welcome back to the Sports Radio 610 Outdoor Show. All right, it's 640 here in the Bayou City. All right, Cliff, we are back, my friend.
All right, Mickey, man, I was going to tell you that I've been getting a lot of drop calls and stuff on the island. Now, I guess it's just maybe the fog or not enough towers, but it's funny because people try to call me around 4 or 5 o'clock when people are coming home on the causeway, and I don't get the call. So if you try to call me in the afternoons, wait till, you know, 6 or 7 o'clock and try to call me again. I'm just not getting the calls. It's weird. It's weird how... like, I lose my phone, I say, honey, call my phone, and she'll call it. It won't even ring next to, you know, and it's just weird how we lose a lot of calls out here in the afternoon. Don't understand it, but everybody's been having that problem.
You wouldn't believe what Blaine's fighting down in South Texas. It's just crazy.
No phone service,
yeah. Yeah, and they had something happen this past week where that morning everything went dark on their phones, and then they all reset, and it came on in Spanish, the recordings on them. They've switched over to the Mexican cell towers across the border. He said, I don't know what's going on, whether our government's shutting these towers down, you know, because of the cartels or, you know. He said he's never seen it like that in his life. But he said there's presence of law enforcement down his way now. He said it's unbelievable what's going on. It's happening.
Man, that's crazy something, man. But I tried to send you a text, though. Tobin, the guy that owns the trout support, Grasswalker, wanted your address.
Is that his name, Strickland?
Yes, he's a super good guy. Wanted to send you some trout support, some Grasswalker. He said, well, send me his address. So I text you to get your address, and it failed. But so when you hang up, send me your address.
Okay, heck yeah. I'll try them. I've never
tried them. Those things are a lot of fun. They really
I bet they're fun to fish with. Hey, I'm always game for something new. You know me. Mm-hmm. I'll try anything.
You know,
if it works, I'll really try it. You know?
But, man, I went back to this. I got this huge box of old corkies. I mean, there's probably 2,000 of old corkies that are 35 years old. And I'm starting to go through them. I go, man, I need to throw this. And I found some that Paul made one year that he put this giant glass rattler in. And it's just so loud you won't believe. But as soon as the first fish bites it, it breaks the rattler after a couple of fish. But you talk about cool. I don't know if I want to throw them or they might be antiques one day. But, man, I got some
remember
really
those
cool
little glass rattlers you'd buy in a little plastic package? And you could push them into your soft plastics like corkies and soft nines and even your shrimp tails and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to use those a lot, especially up here when our water would get kind of messed up and we'd have a lot of runoff and it was dingy. Yep. And those rattles are – They're a game changer. I remember all the old timers when mirror lure first came out with their MRs, you know, the rattling mirror lures.
Right.
Everybody's going, oh, man, that's going to scare all the fish off.
Scare them off.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Yes, man.
I go, man, what are you catching all those fish on? Those new rattling mirror lures that they came out with. Mm-hmm. Oh, God, we got to get some. And they were the ones that were cussing them when they first came out.
That's great, man. But it's, you look at what Corky went through with different types of rattlers. You know, I got all sizes of the Corkys, everything they ever made, I still got. You know, I'm a lure hoarder. And I look at some of those rattlers, you know, that got in there and how he got now he's got the most perfect rattler in. I think, you know,
the rattle chamber is really good now.
They got a really good rattle chamber in it before. But before, they would stick a little bit. You had to bang them around and get them going. But
right.
I remember those ones that he made for the surf. They had a metal bar in the middle of them. Those are really rare. So they don't have a cork insert. They have a foil metal insert for the surf.
Right.
Have you ever seen any of those?
No, I never had any of those. All mine had cork inside them on the wire.
Yes. And I'm going to take those out this year and use them in the surf. I mean, I keep telling myself, you know, I'm going to do it, but I've got about 20
of them. I used to love going by Paul Brown's. We'd go over there and get all of our stuff and get the lures we needed for the spring run or whenever we were fishing. Mm-hmm. And we'd sit around there and talk to Paul. He'd be sitting at his table, and he had it down so good, he could just do it with his eyes closed, twisting all that wire with the hooks on them and everything, and making baits while we're sitting there talking to him. And he never missed a beat, just kept making baits.
Yeah, I remember my boys, you know, like guys come down, the Gunthers and Wallace and all those guys, they go by Paul's house first and get a big old sack of Corkys, and they bring me a big old sack of Corky. And the thing I liked the most was the smell of those new Corkys. Like when you broke a package open,
a new truck, man.
It just kind of has that new Corky smell, you know?
New Corky smell, nothing like it,
new
brother.
Corky smell, man. Then, of course, getting out of the package, you're going to stick in your finger a couple of times and bleed a little bit, you know, but that's all good. You know the hooks were sharp, you know. But, that was something, man. That Corky was a game changer. Now look how far that thing has gone. Everybody's got a Corky. Everybody's got a custom this, custom that, you know.
Exactly. The innovation of tackle and products. I mean, everything that's affiliated with our line of work. I mean, look how it's changed and just, well, we've had 45, 50 years to watch it change.
Right. Well, I know.
Back in the day, it didn't advance so rapidly like it has now. I mean, what else can they do to make it any better? I mean,
I don't know.
We're at the point now. How do you get any better than what we're fishing with now?
I'm seeing it go drone. I'm seeing where every boat's going to have a drone dock where it's going to send out in front of you and locate the fish and give you and drive your boat. I think that's next, where you'll be sent to the dock. And you go, well, we're not going to let the dock yet because the drone hadn't found my fish, you know. So I think that's coming, buddy. I know they're using it now on the redfish line and stuff, buying the schools of reds.
I think there's a law against that, too. I think you got to have a permit or something. That's I think there's something to that.
I know that they did it for ducks. Yeah, they did it for ducks and got in trouble. I heard about that.
Oh, yeah.
They flew it for the looking for the ducks, and that wasn't a good thing. But
rallying birds,
you know, I don't see
run an airboat and push them all to the hunters so they could shoot them, get them off the water. Yeah. That's called rallying birds. That's a big time ticket for that too.
Mm-hmm. I think what you're going to see now, you're going to see speed limit signs down the bank. I said, you know, speed limit 75. I think you're going to see that going down the shoreline. These boats are getting so fast, you have passing lanes, you know.
Well, we'll put one up for Eric Simmons. Said I can't drive 55. I got to go faster. Remember that song?
Well, you know,
I can't drive 55.
55, yeah. Man, there's a lot of those go fast boats, you know. And another thing that's down here and really is bad in the winter too. So you have these commercial guys that run their drone lines, and they're in those little skiffs, those little 16-foot wooden skiffs, and they don't have a GPS, they don't have nothing, and they're going to run. They got to be able to see that shoreline to navigate. And so in the morning, you think you're real smart, get up on that King Ranch shoreline real tight. You're going to get out there and wade in the fog. Well, those commercial guys are coming right down that shoreline, and they're wide open.
Yeah.
So you really got to watch that. You know, you got to get into areas that have a heavy rock you know, they can't get to. There's some areas there that you can pull into that's so heavy rock that they're gonna knock a lower unit off, or they're gonna hit you. So that's the key, is try to find some heavy structure on the bottom in the fog. Our fisher the other day, we fished around a pier. You'd love
this, Cliff. So, if it's foggy, just drop me off in the middle of those rocks.
I'm serious. In the pier, there's a couple of piers on the King Ranch shoreline. We were looking for a place to fish. I said, well, with this fog, we're gonna fish right next to this pier, because that pier is on all everybody's GPS, and they're going to go around the pier, you know, give us some room. So we fished around that pier until they got to where we could see a little bit. Because a lot of times you leave the dock, Mickey, it's not that bad. Then you pull up on the shoreline, here comes a sea fog out of nowhere and just covers you up, you know. And that's when you feel like, man, I hope nobody's running down this shoreline. So
right.
You know.
It's a bad feeling to be waiting in the water and hearing a boat coming at you. There's nothing you can do.
Oh, man. That's the worst weather for me.
As loud as you can.
Yeah. And that's the worst case scenario, is fog. I'd rather have, you know, 40-mile-an-hour wind, norther, anything but fog. I just don't. I've had so many people have accidents in the fog, man.
I used to know a guy, he'd wade fish, you know, this time of year in the fog, and he carried a, you know, a dog whistle around his neck.
There you go. There you go. Mm. I can do something, because light don't do anything.
No. Nah. Yeah. And, you know, it's hard to, what visible clothing do you wear in the fog that somebody can see you way ahead of time, you know?
My worst fog incident was probably, 40 years ago, right after Doug and I caught those big fish. You know, we put it in the paper, and everybody was down here, and it was just a zoo. I mean, people came down, you know, and stuff. So I wasn't used to having any traffic in the areas I was fishing. And so I got down, I left the dock, you know, before daylight, and I'm pulling, it's this real dense fog, and running by the compass, you know, and I shut down in the flat I've been fishing, and I shut down and turned the motor off. I hear somebody talking. I go, oh, my God. About 20 feet in front of me was a whole line of white fishermen.
And I
wouldn't have been able to hear him. Thank God I shut down before I got in there. But, you know, I trolled up to him. I told him, man, I'm sorry I messed up your fishing here. And he goes, yeah. I said, we shouldn't have been out here in the fog. But, you know, you're the only boat we heard. And I said, well, you're the only other boat that's ever been out here in all this stuff, you know, except Wallace. And, you know, the only other people that would really fish that early like that. But then I learned a lesson like that, man. It's just you guys really got to – what I do now is if it's really fog, I'll shut down, turn the engine off, and listen for a little bit, Mickey.
Yeah.
Just sit there and listen and see if you hear anything going on, anybody talking or anything, then fire back up, you know, because – with that engine running, you know, in the fog, you're not hearing nobody yelling. You're not hearing a whole lot.
Right.
You know, so, but that's the thing. But the main thing is just don't run in it. Just wait till it clears, you know, that there's no fish
out
there.
Live to fish another day, man. I mean, there's been a lot of people killed in boating accidents in the fog, running into piers and docks or shorelines, you know, it just.
Yeah.
And so I had an incident years ago, back in the 80s, I guess. We were wading the North Ridge up in the top end of Trinity Bay over there by Anahuac, and it was foggy, and we figured there ain't nobody out here, and there wasn't. And we're wading the ridge, and I hear this boat coming. It's wound up like a rubber band. I said, who in the world would be running like that in the fog? Well, it's coming straight at us. Well, we start getting nervous. You can hear it getting closer. And he actually ran to our left about 30 yards from us, and we saw him when he went by, and we're all yelling and screaming and waving our arms at him to shut it down. And he thought, you know, these fishermen, they don't know, you know, how people. Well, he kept on the throttle. Well, when he crossed the ridge, he had about another 50 yards, and he's going to hit a bluff, a you know, just a dead shoreline. And he did. He hit it at about 40 miles an hour. And all you could hear was moaning and groaning in that boat. And one guy broke his collarbone, another guy broke his arm. They're lucky it didn't kill them, because it was one of those old boats with a windshield across the front, you know, like an old Lamar-type boat.
Oh, yeah.
And, well, anyway, they got out and pushed it off. I would have went and helped them, but I was a good 100 yards from my boat, and I was on a ridge, and there's a channel behind that ridge that, you know, you can't get across to go, you know, offer them help. But they finally pushed it off the bank, got it to where it ran. They ran back across the bay where they had come from. I don't know where they put in at, but they were hurting. Them guys were messed up big time. Lucky
you get hurt, then try to tell somebody to come get you in the fog. You know, you give them your GPS coordinates, and it's hard for
them to find
you.
Well, back then, there wasn't none of that. It was compass only.
Wasn't none of that, right? Compass
only, buddy.
My best fog story was a guy told me in the boat from Matagorda that he had a I told you the story. He had a leaning post in the back of his boat. He had all of his rods and those shotgun things in the back, you know, all leaning back toward the motor. He pulls out. He's going down there coastal. All of a sudden, a barge comes over the top of him, and he hits the top of his rods in the rock.
Whoa.
He said everything got real dark. He says, and he looks up. He looks the kind of front. He sees a green and a red light. He's underneath the bow of that damn barge, man.
That's crazy.
And so he said he's touching his rock. He just gunned. He said, you know, lucky everybody was sitting down. He gunned it. He says, went back to the marina. He says, didn't go out till it cleared. He says, I don't blame you, buddy.
Smart man.
I
said, that was, sometimes people got to learn the hard way, man.
Oh man. Well, hopefully I'll get no more fog. I'm kind of. I think we got about another week or two of this stuff in the southeast.
Well, we have a front coming next week that'll change the weather up. Once you get these fronts, we've got a couple of them back to back next week and weekend, so it'll blow that fog out of here.
I hope so. I got your old buddy Kelly coming down, Rising coming down Monday and Tuesday.
All right.
He's a great fisherman, so we'll see what happens, man.
Yeah, they don't get much better, I can tell you that.
I know it, buddy. I know it.
We're lucky to have the fishermen we have. We work for it all our careers,
yes,
you know. And,
yes, I and, agree.
Only the good old fishermen want to go with washed up old fishing guides like us now.
all the new guys want to go with the young
whippersnappers. I don't want to go with them old men. They're probably crappy and
That's it, exactly. We kind of got what we got, buddy. That's okay. I'm happy with them, man.
That's
I
a
love
good way
them
to go
all.
Out. At least we're still
That's
around.
A good way. That's it, buddy.
Still
That's
kicking,
it.
Like a like a red leg chicken. All right, buddy. Well, hey, if somebody wants to come down to Corpus and fish with you, give them a number, Cliff, so they can get a hold of you, man.
All right, Mickey, area code 361-949-0707. Enjoy the Super Bowl, buddy. I think I'm gonna grill some quail. Oh, Barry, my buddy. Ooh. Barry brought me 15 wild quail in a bag. I mean, who gives you quail? You got to have a really good buddy to give you live quail. I mean, wild quail. That's a good thing, buddy.
That's it. Yeah, that's
all right, Mickey. Have a good
one,
buddy.
Better than wild quail. Nothing better. All right, buddy.
Thank you, buddy.
See you, man. All right. Well, that's a wrap. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today's show. But guess what? We'll be back in the morning bright and early at 4 a.m. right here at Sports Radio 610 KILT Houston.